Hello, folks. Here are the news headlines, because I'm Roy Hunt, and very shortly I shall be talking to Susan Hunter on her World of Arts and Entertainment programme, and I'll be telling her all about my new show, Roy Hunt's very own musical.
Now, it's a true delight to be speaking with the versatile and multi-talented Roy Hunt. Such a pleasure to have you on the show, Roy.
Well, nice to be here, Suzanne. What a posh name for a show.
Ooh, Arts and Entertainment.
World of Arts and Entertainment.
Well, only the best come to join me on the show, so it's an absolute pleasure to have you talking today. I mean, legions of fans are going to know your iconic radio work, including the news headlines, but also your numerous stage and screen roles. And I understand that you've just recently finished pantomime in a wonderful venue.
Yeah, what about that? Well, I hadn't done panto for 20-odd years. And I was asked to write the panto for the Wilton's Music Hall, you know, which is a place I've been interested in for the last 50, 60 years, I suppose. But it's now open as a theatre again, has been for 10 years, and it's doing ever so well. But they asked me if I'd do write a pantomime for them, so I said, yeah, not half. And the girl said, would you be in it? I said, well, I haven't done a panto for 20 years, but I tell you what, I will be in it, but on one proviso, that I play the dame in the pantomime. She said, why? I said, because I've never, ever done it before. In 56 years in show business, I've never played dame in a pantomime, and I thought I ought to do it just once before I snuff it. So she said, okay, you're on for that. And my Mrs. Debbie, she directed the show and directed it very well. We did it there. And we had a five-week run, and we absolutely packed them out. It was just terrific. It was what I call an old-fashioned pantomime. No blue jokes, you know, just good fun, lots of slapstick, all sorts of stuff with a marvellous cast. So we had five terrific weeks.
Sounds absolutely amazing, and a lovely venue as well, the Wilton Music Hall, because many people will remember you with a lot of affection from the series, The Good Old Days.
Oh, yes,
and you'll always be associated.
I did a few of those. Yeah. That was one of my first televisions ever, was that?
Yes.
Then I kept coming back until they found me out.
But yeah, that's obviously, you've written so many books on Music Hall and you've recorded CDs. You're actually president of the Music Hall Society. So what is it about Music Hall in particular that sort of attracted you to it?
Well, I think what it was really was being brought up by my gran, which was a great thing. Everybody should do it if they get half a chance. They should let their gran bring them up, because they're such a soft touch. Much more of a soft touch than a mum and dad. So she brought me up and she took me every week to the Croydon Empire, which was our local variety theatre, of course, in Croydon. And I think in those early days I did see a lot of the old performers, like Harry Champion, like all the sort of Randolph Sutton, Hetty King, G.H. Eliot. I saw them there, and I just thought they were terrific. And I was only a kid at the time, but somehow they seemed to have something rather special about them, and they sang terrific songs. Songs that you didn't hear very often those days. You don't hear them very often now, but they're still beautiful songs, and I think that was it. Now, when I came into the business, I did work with quite a few of the old-time performers, and my gran had always sung old musical songs to me, you know, whereas most kids were sung to sleep with Hush-a-Bye Baby. So when I was a little kid, my gran used to sing me to sleep to The Hole in the Elephant's Bottom and things like that. Rather leery, rude old songs. And I loved them all, and there were so many songs, and she just used to sing snatches. And when I worked with Hetty King and G.H. Eliot and people like that, I'd say, do you know this song? I'd sit in the dressing room and sing a bit of the song. And, of course, they knew them all. They were all old musical songs. And that sort of started me on the track of tracking down lots of musical songs, finding out about lots of the performers, which I've put together for Roy Hunt's very own music hall.
I mean, this has been a lifelong love, really, then, right? Yeah, back in the early days.
Love,
yeah. I mean, former guest Ken Dodd cited Max Miller as a great influence on his comedy style.
Well, I think he was a great influence on everybody's style, and I do a great chunk of Max Miller in the show on Friday.
Yeah.
You know, because it's one of my best impressions.
Yes, I've heard that.
Yeah, and I do a whole chunk of Max, and all in the gear and everything, and I cover all sorts of, you know, people who I admire, and Ken, of course, is just terrific, and he's like me in the fact that he loves the business, and he loves the people in it, and he loves the old songs, and he loves the old jokes. as you will discover if you come on Friday. I do too.
Oh, brilliant. I mean, what is it about Max Miller? Because you are president of the Max Miller Society. What is it about him that affected you the most?
And, well, I think the thing was he used an audience so very well. He could walk on stage in a huge theatre, and you felt as when you sat in the audience, he was talking directly to you. He used the audience. He always put it down. He used to say, when I get in front of an audience like Ken does too, he said, I throw a pebble into a pool and the ripples come out. Now, if I can just get one person I aim at in the audience, they'll laugh, the person next to them will laugh at them laughing, etc., etc. So it's waves of laughter come out. He said, and that's where he was absolutely so good. And he always, when he walked on stage, he never sort of did his first jokes to the front row of the stalls, the expensive seats. He always walked straight on and looked straight up to the gallery, which, of course, were the cheapest seats in the house. And he directed about his first three gags up there. And he always reckoned, Max, if I could get them, the gallery going, then the laughs would spread down.
Get the mass majority.
He was the most fascinating man, full of charm. He was a very good musician. He was a good writer of rude songs, not filthy songs, because people used to say, when I was a kid, you didn't go and see Max Miller, dirty old devil. I said, I never knew he was telling dirty gags, which he never was. He never told a dirty gag. He actually, it was like seaside postcards.
Yeah.
That was the sort of stuff he did.
Yes, exactly. Just a little bit naughty, a little bit on the edge, but nothing blue, like you say.
No, never, ever heard him swear, ever on stage. And my gran, he was a great favourite of hers, so she dragged me all over London to wherever Max was appearing to see it.
Oh.
And my aunt used to say, you're not taking him to see that dirty old devil. And she used to say, he doesn't know what he's doing. He just likes the colourful costumes.
Yeah, that's the thing, as a child, it all goes over your head, doesn't it, to a certain degree, what's going on. But
that's it. Yeah. She didn't realise at seven I knew exactly what he was talking about.
Worldly wise already.
Not all.
Now, I mean, when it comes to Music Hall, a lot of people talk about the great Dan Leno. And I believe that the man was a subject of your specialist subject on TV's Mastermind.
That's right, yeah.
What do you personally consider so special about Dan Leno as a performer?
Well, I think he was a total individual. He really was. He was extremely talented and a marvellous character actor. Now, he played Dame very successfully for many years at Drury Lane and Sadler's Wells, places like that. Mm. And he really made his Dame a real woman. Not like a female impersonator, I don't mean. Mm. But he made it like a genuine character, and he was a blooming good actor from what I read about it, you know.
Yeah.
And I did try and base my Dame very much on looking like Dan Leno, but I actually played him really much more like Mrs. Shufflewick. Those who ever remember Mrs. Shufflewick,
yeah,
who was a little old Cockney mum, you know, and she used to play all like that. So, yeah, she was just terrific. And I said that I would always want to be recognised as an old Cockney mum. And the best criticism we had in the papers, one of them said, Roy Hudd is the epitome of an old English London broad. Which I thought was the best notice I've ever had in my life.
Brilliant. Did you have your wrinkle down stockings as well, or anything like that?
Oh, I did, or
Add the lot. Oh, my word. That sounds absolutely amazing.
Well, it was the hardest I've ever worked in pantomime, because I used to do a lot of slapstick, but with the Dame, you're changing costumes all the time, and particularly in a place like Wilton's, which is extremely difficult to get on and off stage.
Oh.
And as I've been all my life, it's always extremely difficult for me to get off stage. Because they don't want to go.
No.
Rather like Ken.
Yes. Good 3-hour session.
Well, our musical director in the pantomime, he said, I must say, he said, every show with Roy is an adventure.
Oh, brilliant.
Well, I used to like mucking about. We had a wonderful cast who could respond to sort of good, if you threw a line in, they weren't thrown, you know what I mean?
Yeah, good ad-libbers.
It was really, it was smashing. It was one of the best pantos I've ever done, purely by chance, really.
Oh, that's amazing, because you've done a lot of pantomimes. I mean, what characters, have you gone through the gamut of pantomime characters, would you say?
Well, all the great sort of, because for years I was always the Idle Jack, or the Buttons, or the Silly Billy, or that sort of character. but never in drag before. I worked with some marvellous comics. I worked with the best dame I'd ever worked with. It was a fellow called Jack Tripp, who was from Brighton, of course. Well, he was from Plymouth originally, but he lived in Brighton all his life. And I did about 15 pantos with Jack. As soon as we met, we hit it off as a combination. And we did all sorts of odd things that he remembered from like 50 years before. And we brought them up to date and always worked together on stuff. And it was an absolute joy. He was marvellous. And they talk about sort of, you know, getting into drag and that, but drag acts and female impersonators are no good in panto because they frighten the kids with those garish makeups, you know. The only time you can have a garish makeup is if you're playing Ugly Sister, which the kids are supposed to hate you anyway. You know, so to do Dame as that, it's got to be a, like a mum sort of figure. And Jack really was, and he was such a good actor. And when we were on together, I sometimes used to be doing a scene with him, and I thought, I used to think, he really is my mother. And I don't think he was. When I found out later, he certainly wasn't.
Absolutely, yes. Don't get too close. I mean, it's all about the partnerships, isn't it, with panto?
Absolutely.
And how you bounce
well,
off
it's
each
very
other.
Much a team show, and I love that, you
yes,
know.
Yes, yes.
Which is really why it's interesting for me to do the one-man show, because
yes.
I've always got away with it, because I've always been with someone else on the stage for most of the things I've done. And if I'm in trouble, they'll get me out of trouble. If they're in trouble, I'll get them out of trouble.
Yeah.
But when you're on your own, you've got to do it yourself.
Absolutely. Oh, well, I have no doubt that you will just be marvellous on stage. I mean, when you said about pantomime, but you've written several books on pantomimes, obviously lots of jokes and what have you.
Yeah.
Would you say that sort of there's a link between pantomime and music hall?
Very much, because the original pantomimes, of course, were very much like fairy stories with Harlequin and Columbine Clown and Pantaloon and stuff like that.
Yes.
And it was almost really was. It was big chase scenes. It was like almost like in parts, like an actual pantomime, it really was, in the early days. And then it all got very stale over the years. And in the Victorian times, they pulled in music hall comedians. And that, to me, and to every comic who's worth his salt, was the greatest day that ever happened in the history of pantomime. Because they put all of us people in, and suddenly it was people in the audience could see music hall comedians. And they were all warned very much they mustn't do rude stuff and all that sort of thing. But they weren't. They never did. They were just funny people. But the actual bringing in of music hall performers into the theatres was a change, complete change of gear for pantomime. And it was marvellous because very few women used to go to the music halls themselves. It was almost strictly an all-male sort of do in the early days. And suddenly wives and children could actually go to see a pantomime and they could see the great Dan Leno, the great Little Titch, the great Mari Lloyd and people doing a show for children. So it was a huge kick in the WhatsApp for everybody, bringing pantomime up to date and making it successful.
Yeah, real family affair then, wasn't it? You know,
and very much so, which it should always be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you were to recommend a novice to become a music hall performer, what talents and skills would you say they needed in their armoury?
I think what they do need is rapport with an audience. You must like people. You must like people to go on there, because if you don't, well, what's the point in going on? You've got to like people, you've got to give them the sort of things they want, obviously. But the thing is to listen all the time, listen to an audience. If you listen to the audience themselves, they do everything for you. If you get a funny line, there was a great comic called Ted Ray, and he was brilliant at timing. And I remember when I first started on radio, the Workers' Playtime, I worked with Ted quite a lot on that show. And I used to say, Ted, how do you do it? What's the secret of timing? Which is something, you know, that no one understands, because people have all got different sorts of timing. Tommy Cooper would time a joke entirely differently to someone sort of like Jack Benny or, you know, like that, quite differently. But I said to him, what's the secret of timing, Ted? And he said, there's no secret. He said, it's very simple. He said, when the audience are laughing, you shut up. As soon as they stop laughing, you talk. He said, that is the secret of timing. which is about right when you think of it. It's much, much more involved than that, because the way people laugh, all that sort of stuff is involved in it. But I think it's a very good rule. If the audience are laughing, shut your trap. When they stop laughing, talk.
Very technical.
Yeah, very technical.
Just common sense, isn't it, really?
But well, it's a bit more than that when you sort of get into it, because there are all sorts of shades of when to talk and stuff like that. But basically, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have got that rapport in abundance, and like myself, TV audiences would have been delighted in seeing you on our screens, actually, in December, appearing as Bud Flanagan in We're Doomed, the Story of Dad's Army. But you actually played Bud Flanagan in a play called Underneath the Arches. Tell us a little bit about that show. Yeah, yeah.
And Chris Timothy, who I'm doing a thing with tonight, would you believe, on Friday night is music night. Chris and I are doing a medley of Flanagan and Allen songs.
Oh, lovely.
So I saw him for the first time I'd seen him for about 20 years yesterday. So it was a bit of an emotional sort of reunion, really.
Yeah,
so we're going to be doing it live tonight from there. But the thing is, in the one-man show, of course, I do a chunk of Flanagan and Allen songs. I do all sorts of things that I really like doing.
Yes.
You know, and that does seem to have, you know, got people going. I mean, I daren't go to do my one-man show without doing, for a start, Max Miller, because everyone likes that.
Yes.
I can't do it without doing Flanagan, the songs of Flanagan and Allen. I can't do the show without doing all sorts of odd little bits and pieces that people remember me doing over the years.
Yeah.
And so it really is, as far as I'm concerned, it's an absolute labour of love, and I enjoy it.
Oh, definitely. You can put everything in that you love. And I mean, when you were playing Bud Flanagan, you always play such wonderful characters, and you really sort of embodied him. And I believe that he considered you the best person to play him on stage in a dramatisation of his life. Was that a great honour for you? Did you really love that?
Well, they only told me that after I'd written the show Underneath the Arches, and it was Chesney Allen, his old partner, who was still with us, still alive at that time.
Yes.
And Ches was a huge help, you can imagine, in writing the show. He came up with all sorts of little gags. He told me the true stories of various things. It was great. And he said, well, Bud always thought you should play him, you know. And I said, really? I said, we weren't the similar types. He said, no, you had love of an audience, and so did I. He said,
lovely, isn't it? That must have been so lovely to find that out.
Oh, it was, and Ches was absolutely marvellous. He was 90-odd, you know, when he worked with us down at Chichester, and which is where we started the show.
Yes.
And as I say, there's all sorts of bits of chunks of that show coming to my one-man show when I can remember them.
Well, such a lot of repertory to go through, isn't there, of so many years performing. Is it sort of, is it 65 years now, or is it
56 years.
Oh,
yeah, and I can't say I've loved every minute. We all have our ups and downs, but I'm in a great spot at the moment because people like me, and I get to do all sorts of odd jobs, really at the advice of my very first agent, who was my agent for 50 years, who said, listen, son, variety is not going to last very much longer. And I didn't believe it. I was getting a tenner a week, you know, in variety. And I said, that's all right. But he made me go into rep to do shows, to do acting and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yes.
I mean, the actual acting came in well because we're doing television films of Dennis Potter's.
Yes, Lipstick,
you know,
on Your Collar.
A terrific eye-opener for me. And he was one of the nicest and funniest men, and a brilliant, brilliant ideas man. And so that led to all sorts of little acting bits. And I do a big chunk of an acting bit in this. Not that big, but it's a pretty devastating piece that an old musical comedy became a star because of this song. And it really is quite something called The Ballad of Sam Hall. So I do that in it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's led to all sorts of things that Music Hall did, because most of the musical performers were good actors as well.
Yes.
They never realised that. I remember saying to Jack Tripp, Jack, you're a marvellous actress. What are you talking about? He said, I'm an old queen who gets dressed up as a woman. What are you talking about? I said, but when I look into your face when we're on the stage together, I believe you. I believe you're my mother, you know. He said, well, you're not all there, son. I mean, I had a wonderful, I've had some marvellous little bits just recently, as you say. It was like doing Bud in the Dad's Army thing. Yeah. And then I had a smashing little part in Benidorm the other night.
Oh, yeah.
Which was terrific.
Yeah.
It really was. And it was just totally out of the blue. And I said to the bloke, they said, would you be interested in doing it? I said, this is the first time I've read a television script for a long time where I've laughed out loud. At it, so I had to go over there and do it, which I did.
Yeah. Oh, is that going to air soon? Is that aired already, or is that coming out soon?
Yes, it came out last week.
Oh,
and I was so cross because I wanted to mention it to you today. It was going to be on this week.
Oh.
The week coming.
Well, you've always got to catch up.
They put it on the week before.
You've always got catch up TV, which is a great joy, isn't it, now?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was a very fun season.
Oh, brilliant. Because a lot of people are turning up in that series, aren't they? You know, your Sheila Reid.
Oh, yeah. And the chap who writes it, Darren Little, you know, he loves old comics. So he's always trying to get old comics in, you know.
Absolutely brilliant. I mean, the thing is, you're talking about Dennis Potter and karaoke and Lipstick on Your Collar. I mean, such iconic TV and a very specific style, I would imagine. Did you find you had to go into a certain style with his sort of work?
Well, not really, because Dennis liked people to make him laugh.
Mm-hmm.
He liked people who made him laugh. And, of course, Dennis was a huge fan of music hall.
Oh.
Which was the first time we ever sort of started to shoot something. They said, give me something. Dennis was there watching the filming. And they said, give me something for the level, you know, the voice level. So I started reciting a poem, which was a funny stuff, by a man called Billy Bennett. He used to write wild poems. And it was a dirty night, and I started shouting out, and a dirty trick, when our ship turned over in the Atlantic. And Dennis joined in. It was the schooner Hesperus. We lay asleep in our bunks. And I thought, blimey, if he knows that, he's got to be a fan of musical.
Yes.
So he all started every day shooting with doing some quote of an old gag or an old piece of poetry or an old song or something.
Oh, that's lovely, isn't it? It sort of united you all, really. Something different to the filming, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And Dennis loved to get you. And he said to me, I like to get you relaxed, he said.
Yeah.
When he said, I know you're going to give me a good turn, he said, if I get you relaxed and all that before we start.
Yeah.
Which he was right.
Yeah,
you know?
It's amazing. I mean, you've been in lots of television as well, like Common as Muck with Edward Woodward.
I loved it.
That was fun.
Yeah. Well, Edward Woodward came from Croydon, where I came from. And when we started to do this this series, Common as Muck, about the Dustbin Men, he said, the first day we were there together, and he said, I come from Croydon. I said, I know you know. I said, you were the great, great sort of one who we always quoted was a local boy made good. And he said, but you were born in Neville, you lived in Neville Road. I said, yes. He said, you brought up by your gran. I said, yes. And he said, and her name was Alice. I said, yes. He said, and she had a friend called Ivy. I said, yeah, Auntie Ivy. We all used to call her that. And he said, well, Auntie Ivy was my real auntie, was Ted's real auntie. And he said, whenever they used to go shopping, he said, I used to babysit you. Me! Babysat by the Equalizer. Not bad, was it?
That's a small world, isn't it?
Isn't it amazing?
Oh, you were meant to be together again then, weren't you?
Obviously, well, I thought we did have some fun on it, you know.
Oh, that's brilliant. I mean, you've played so many great characters. You've done everything from Ray Cooney farces to William Shakespeare. You've been Fagin in the West End.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing. And you started out, of course, as a redcoat.
Indeed, I did, Clacton.
Did you, Clacton? Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. And one side of me was a chap called Harry Webb, who came down there with a group, Harry Webb and the Drifters. And he changed his name to Cliff Richard. I don't know what happened to him.
Oh, no, no. Obscurity, I think.
Yeah, he did all right. And the other side, in the chalet next to the other side of me, was a fellow called Dave O'Marney, who changed his name to Dave Allen.
Mm.
And he did quite well as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, would you say this was a pretty good learning ground?
It was a fabulous learning ground, because you didn't have to be any good, you know. What you basically had to do was keep all the campers entertained and make them laugh and take them on, you know, take the kids around to the fairs and compare, like, the Knobbly Knees contests and all that sort of stuff. So you really did get to know people. And I mean, I still get letters from people who remember meeting me when I was a redcoat, and I remember meeting them, and we became big pals, and we still write and send Christmas cards to each other and report on the families and what's happened to them all, and it's quite nice.
lovely, isn't it, to keep in touch after that time? Obviously, it made a real impact on their lives, you know, watching you there. So,
well, that's lovely. You see, because Redcoats were sort of like holy of holies. Everyone thought they were wonderful.
Yes.
And we weren't really, but we were just doing what we were told.
Just and having a good time.
The most important thing, again, was for a comic, you had to like the punters.
Yes.
You had to like the people you were doing, even though some of them were impossible.
Yes.
But you still had to.
You can't be like Mr. Partridge in Heidi High, hating
That's
everyone.
Right, can you? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I didn't play with him. Leslie Dwyer, who played,
oh.
Hated the kids, do you remember?
Yeah.
But
oh,
he was being
good.
Funny, man.
Oh, he's very, very good, wasn't he?
Well, I loved that whole series.
I know, I did. I was talking to Sue Pollard probably about 3 years ago, and we just had a laugh. We were just reminiscing, and it was good fun.
Well, I always thought, you see, now Sue's a person who makes you laugh a lot.
Yes.
But she was such a good actress.
Yeah.
Funny enough, Chris Timothy and I were talking about her only yesterday at the rehearsal with the orchestra. And I said, I will never forget that last episode of Heidi High when she became a yellow coat.
Oh, I know.
Oh, it made you cry.
I know.
And she stood there in the middle of that camp, didn't she?
Yeah.
Crying with joy.
Yeah.
God, she was marvellous.
She's
and still is marvellous, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, we're talking about your one-man show. I mean, you did a one-man show back in 2004, All My Own Work, at the National Music Hall.
That's right.
Talking of Wilton Music Hall earlier, I mean, the National Music Hall, that must have you have a wonderful atmosphere about the place as well.
It really is. You know, as much as we had a whole... They gave us Wilton's Music Hall for a week free. Free! They gave it to the Musical Society to celebrate our 50th birthday. And we did it there, and that's when I did All My Own Work. The show all about, talking about, you know, what I'd done over the years. It was good fun. This one, of course, is just as much fun. In fact, it's better, because better things happen to the great stars of the musical than ever happened to me.
Oh, well.
So,
I'm sure they're equally brilliant. But and we were talking about celebrities and, talking of music hall stars, celebrities today, they're always in the magazines, the tabloids. But I understand in your one-man show, you get to hear the stories, the scandals of these great music hall people.
Yeah, more of the stories of their secrets and stuff like that.
Yes.
Scandals, yes, one or two.
But
that isn't what I concentrate on, because I always get very upset when people do plays or talk about people who were in our business and make people laugh a lot, and then they say rotten things about them, and I always think that's pulling the wings off the butterfly, and I don't like that.
No, let it just be.
It's nothing to do with anybody, really.
No, exactly.
It's interesting to find out, you know, people like great musical stars started in odd ways, you know. Loads of them started black-faced, you know, like the black and white minstrels.
Oh, yes.
There was so many acts that were just white guys blacked up in those days. And they started like that. Another one started with the pig's trotter salesman. And he became a marvellous, marvellous musical performer. And I always say, he was a pig's trotter salesman, not an easy job when you're living in Golders Green.
True,
like
one market.
You get it, that only came in the other day when I was rehearsing, and I thought, that's a good line, I'll put that in.
That was like a Ken Dollar keep, that one.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So there you are, it was the birth of a gag, you just heard it.
Oh, wonderful, love it. I mean, you're going to be displaying a lot of gags, aren't you?
It is a joy to do, Suzanne, this particular show, as I say, because it's a labour of love to me.
Yeah.
And to get to sing all those songs, the strange songs as well as the famous ones, and it's a joy for me to be able to do them and not be driving my own family mad singing them. You know?
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, you're a comedian, you're an actor, you're a singer, so you're going to be singing lots of songs and there'll be lots of jokes.
Yeah.
What can audiences expect from the show? Just more of all that wonderful stuff?
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully, love, yeah.
Brilliant. I mean, it sounds like it's going to be absolutely wonderful. You're going to be up and down the country.
Yeah, we're going everywhere. We go, the nearest I think we go to Guildford is Guildford, of course, and the nearest one to that probably is Bromley.
Is it the Churchill Theatre?
Yeah, well, we don't go. We go. I'm only doing one or two shows a week. I'm no Ken Dodd. Ken used to do 7 shows a week, one-nighters, in different venues. I mean, he said to me, I spoke to him not long ago, and he said, oh, no, he said, I've cut down. I said, well, I'm glad you haven't cut down, Ken, for God's sake. I mean, he's 80, but whatever.
Oh, I was going to say, that's why his hair looks like that. He's plugged in at the mains, I think.
Yes, and he said, oh, no, I've cut down. He said, I'm only doing 2 or 3 a week now.
Oh.
I thought, blimey, you know.
And the length of them as well, so it's pretty tiring, isn't it, for him? But no, you've got to do what you love and where you love it. And, I mean, we're very lucky because you're going to be in Guildford at the Yvonne Arno on the 29th of January.
That's it.
And you've been there before. You're quite a Guildford, would you say, a veteran? You've been there a number of times performing?
Yes, I have indeed. I've done three shows there. I did one of my first pantomimes there with Jack Tripp from Brighton, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We did that one there. And I wrote that one for Guildford, that one, Robin Hood and Babes in the Wood, it was.
Oh, brilliant.
And so we did that one there. Then the next I did a play, an American play, with Patricia Routledge there.
Oh, yes.
The Solid Gold Cadillac, which was a very famous American play.
Oh.
And I enjoyed that. And then the last one I did there was When We Are Married, the J.B.
Yes.
Priestley.
Oh, I love that. I saw that.
Oh, me too. It's a
Amazing. Fabulous
piece, and I'd seen it years before. You know, and I'd always said, if ever I became an actor, I'd love to play the drunken photographer in it, which I did.
Yeah, you're amazing.
Yeah,
I
loved it, didn't I?
Yeah.
And we went to the Garrick and we did a good 6 months with it there, which was terrific. But it started at Guildford.
Fabulous cast as well, wasn't it? It must have been great fun on stage with that when you've got
all
those
people. Well, it really was. I mean, she was terrific.
Maureen Lipman
was terrific. We had Sam Kelly in it. We had, what's her name, Linda Barron. We had a hell of a good cast. Michelle Dotrice,
of course,
who was married to Ted Woodward. Yeah, that's right. So we had a lot of fun talking about things that Ted had done and what he hadn't done. You know? And he was a lovely guy. And Michelle was just terrific in it. Everyone said, well, she hasn't done anything, you know, since Ted died. But she was absolutely smack on. And now she's doing lots of other work
as
well.
No, she's wonderful. You never lose that, do you, at the end of the day?
No,
amazing.
That's true.
No.
It's like riding a bike, you know.
It is, yeah. Just get back on it again.
The name
of your show, Roy, is called?
Roy Hudd's Very Own Music Hall.
Fabulous. And you're going to be up and down the country, and people can always find out a little bit more on your website. Get those seats. It's looking good, isn't it? It's looking like it's getting pretty packed there, so that people have to be quick to get the seats, and I think it's going to be great.
Well, it's doing very well. I was really pleased because my missus looked up all the stuff on the booking plans and things, and it's looking good.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm thrilled a bit.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's going to be absolutely fantastic, and I'm sure you're going to have a great time doing it, as you always do.
I will do my best.
You've been an absolutely smashing guest today, and I wish you lots and lots of success with the tour.
Thanks a lot, Suzanne.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Roy.
You take care.
You too. And that was the wonderful, versatile singer, actor, wonderful person, Roy Hudd.
Brooklyn's Radio. Loving arts and entertainment.